Moving my phone from my room is something I have aspired to for years, and finally doing it has improved my sleep significantly. It also prevents me from being overly anxious about ongoing communications, texts and email mostly, by forcing me to allow those conversations to pause. I don't need to respond right away. Dustin. Day 11. Thursday. Set yourself up for success. Now that we've removed some of the triggers that make us automatically reach for our phones, we're going to add some new triggers. Things that make it more likely for us to do the things we say we want to do, or that we know that we enjoy. In other words, we're trying to help ourselves transition from a negative goal, using our phones less, to a positive goal, living up to our intentions. We're trying to establish happier, healthier habits. For example, if you are trying to resist the urge to text while driving, your first step might be to keep your phone out of reach while you're in the car. Avoid the trigger. Your next step might be to plan some positive alternatives. You could program your favorite stations into your radio, or hit play on a podcast you've been meaning to listen to before you head out on the road. One previous text offender put a post-it note on her dashboard that said, "Sing." Some other ideas. If you are trying to meditate every morning when you get up, then decide ahead of time how long you'll meditate and what the focus of your meditation will be. Choose a spot where you will meditate and make that space as calm and distraction-free as possible. If you say you want to read more, pick a particular book or magazine you're interested in and put it on your bedside table or in your bag or pocket. If you want to play more music, take your instrument out of its case and put it someplace where you're going to see it. If you want to be less tempted to bring your phone into your bedroom to soothe yourself before sleep, make your bedroom a more soothing place to be in without your phone. Get a nice set of sheets. Hang pictures that calm you. Do something involving lavender. Please take a second to identify several changes you can make to your environment to make it more likely that you'll do the things you say you want to. Then make those changes. I could lay out exercise clothes on the chair in my bedroom the night before so that I am more likely to run, walk, right after the kids are out the door. Christine. Identify your true rewards. My hope is that by this point in the breakup, you've developed some awareness of the rewards behind your habits, what your brain is actually after when you reach for your phone. For example, connection, new information, distraction, alleviation of boredom, escape, a break from the task at hand. If you're not sure if you've correctly identified the reward, try running an experiment on yourself. For example, if you think you're reaching for your phone out of a desire for distraction, try taking a break in a different way, such as getting a cup of coffee or chatting with a friend or colleague. If your craving for your phone goes away, you've successfully identified the reward, as well as an alternative way to provide it. If not, test a different hypothesis. Once you've figured out your rewards, you can start thinking of other things you could do, besides grabbing your phone, to achieve the same result. Day 12, Friday. Download an app blocker. We tend to think about our relationships with our phones as all-or-nothing affairs. If we give ourselves access to one app, then we worry that we'll also be giving ourselves access to all the other tempting apps on our phones. But it doesn't have to be this way. The solution is simply to download an app blocker, an app that blocks your access to sites and apps that you tend to get sucked into, while still letting you use the rest of your phone. The first step is to acknowledge and get over the irony of using an app to protect yourself from your apps. The second is to use the app to set up block lists of problematic sites and apps organized into specific categories and contexts. For example, my lists include the news, focused work, extreme nights, and weekend mornings. Then, whenever you want undistracted time, or want to use your phone for something without having to worry about temptation, you simply start a session, specifying which block lists you want to enable and for how long. I'll give you some specific app blocker suggestions at the end of this audiobook. Some of these apps allow you to schedule sessions in advance, which is a fantastic way to change your habits. If you want to stop checking social media before bed, you simply block your access to social media before bed. And some app blockers come with an added bonus, the ability to block sites and apps across devices, meaning that if you've got something blocked on your phone, you can't cheat and look at it on your computer. App blockers are particularly useful if you need to use social media apps for work or school. They're also useful anytime there's an app that you know is problematic, but that you can't bear to keep off your phone, such as dating apps that don't have browser versions. If you simply must have access to these apps, you can use an app blocker to set a schedule ahead of time so that you have access to them only during certain hours of the day. I personally use my app blocker to prevent myself from obsessively reading the news. Now that I know that I can't access the sites or apps from my phone, I no longer feel as much of an urge to try. And somehow I don't seem to be any less informed than I was before. Day 13, Saturday. Set boundaries. Now that we've established some digital boundaries for ourselves, it's time to get physical. 1. Establish no phone zones. As the name suggests, a no phone zone is a place where you do not use your phone. Full stop. No phone zones are great because they remove the need for decision making in the moment. They can also help reduce conflict. If everyone knows that phones aren't allowed at the dinner table, then you don't need to have a new argument about it each night. Take a moment to establish several no-phone zones for yourself and, if applicable, your family or roommates. I suggest starting with the dinner table and bedroom. Banning phones from the dinner table brings people together, and banning phones from bedroom improves sleep. The effective date of your no-phone zones should be tonight, and these zones should continue to be off-limits for the remainder of our 30-day experiment. No phones on the table. I will try to get my husband to do this too. Part of the reason I end up picking mine up is because he's on his. Aaron. 2. Give your phone a wake-up time. You can also create no phone zones based on time. For example, no checking email after 6 p.m. Since it's the weekend, though, let's focus on the morning instead. Here's what I'd like you to do. Assign your phone a wake-up time for tomorrow morning. This should be at least an hour after you get up yourself. Choose something restorative or fun that you will do for yourself while your phone sleeps. For example, reading a book, playing with your pet, cooking a nice breakfast. There are two ways to enforce your phone's wake-up time. The first is to put it on airplane mode, or turn it off, and charge it in a place where you won't see your phone at all until it's wake-up time. The second method is to use your new app blocker to enforce your phone's wake-up time. This approach is useful when you want to have access to certain features on your phone, but not others. Say, you're trying to coordinate breakfast with someone and don't want to miss a call or text, or you're going for a walk and want to be able to use the camera. Simply create a block list with the problematic apps and sites, give it an appealing name, something like weekend break, and start a session. If your app blocker has the option, you can even schedule recurring sessions in advance, which is a fantastic way to reclaim weekend mornings for yourself. I find that if I don't reach for my phone first thing in the morning, then I tend to have a better relationship with my phone for the rest of the day, too. Joan. Day 14, Sunday. Stop fubbing. Fubbing is short for phone snubbing. Having your phone on the table during a meal? That's fubbing. Checking your phone in the middle of a conversation? Fubbing. Texting while you're at a party? Fubbing. These types of behaviors have become so common that we often don't even notice that we're engaging in them. But we are. You've likely already begun to reduce your fubbing, thanks to all the work you've put into the breakup so far. but let's make it official. From now until the end of our experiment, please do your best not to fub. Starting today, by keeping your phone off the table at meals. If you've already designated your table as a no-phone zone, you are ahead of the game. Checking your phone is like picking your nose. There's nothing wrong with it, but no one should have to watch you do it. Alex. Fubbing rule of thumb. Phones should add to, not subtract from, your interactions. Okay to pull out phone. If the involved parties agree that the phone is adding to the interaction, for example, showing a friend your vacation photos. Not okay to pull out phone. If you are using your phone to distance yourself from the interaction you are supposedly having, for example, you're bored with the conversation, so you start texting someone else. What to do about OPP? Other people's phones. One of the things that makes fubbing so tricky to deal with is that the less you do it yourself, the more you'll notice when it's being done to you. Eating with friends, colleagues, and classmates can be particularly difficult because even if you have your own phone tucked away, it's likely that they'll have their own phones out on the table. When you have guests over to your home, consider asking them to leave their phones in a basket by the door. At first, they'll think you're a total weirdo, but by the time they leave, they may consider adopting the same ritual themselves. If you're out, you can keep your own phone off the table and then make a point of asking your dining companion for permission before you check it. The equivalent of, "Do you mind if I take this call?" Chances are that the friend will give you a confused look, as if you have just asked permission to breathe. This is your opportunity to explain that the reason you are asking for permission is that you are trying not to fub people. Not only is this an interesting conversation starter, but it also will make your dining companions feel mildly self-conscious the next time they feel the urge to pull out their own phones. In the beginning, this can feel pretty forced and manipulative, because in the beginning, it will be forced and manipulative. But once you get in the habit of keeping your phone off the table, you may begin to ask permission out of a genuine desire to not be rude. If you're with a close friend, you can turn this into a playful ritual. For example, when something comes up in conversation that we want to check, several of my friends and I regularly use permission to use phone, permission granted, as an easy way to make sure that we're all on the same page and that no one feels fubbed. When you're out to dinner with friends and everyone else is on their phones, try taking a photo of them on their devices and then texting it to them with a note saying, "I miss you." Nate. If you are a parent, boss, or teacher, it's a bit easier to deal with other people's phones when you're the one in charge. We've already talked about establishing no-phone zones at the dinner table as a way to reduce fubbing. Depending on your position, you could also ban phones in meetings or classes. If you think that going cold turkey will be impossible for your children, colleagues, students, you could offer a one-minute tech break in the middle of the meal or class or meeting so that people can check their phones. That's a suggestion from psychologist Larry Rosen, a professor of technology and behavior who wrote a book called Eye Disorder about how our phones are causing us to exhibit symptoms of psychiatric disorders like ADHD and OCD. The trickiest thing about setting rules is that you have to follow them. Don't be the jerk who tells their kids that they can't check their phones at the dinner table, only to keep yours by your side. If you're a kid and your parents fub you, call them out on it. When it comes to acknowledging their smartphone addictions, parents are the worst. They're also particularly vulnerable to feeling guilty about things they might be doing now that will screw you up later. You can make your objection known directly. "Please stop fubbing me." Or take a more aggressive approach. "I hope you know that every minute you spend on your phone while we're together is a minute that I'll be spending in therapy." How to respond to phone calls and texts when you're with other people. First step, consider not responding. What's the worst that could happen? We all have a somewhat inflated sense of our own importance. If you decide that you are going to take a call or engage in a conversation by text while you're around other people, consider leaving the room, even if you're home. It's less rude, and it's also annoying to have to do, which makes it less likely that you will take calls in the middle of meals or start texting under the table. How to be reached in an emergency. If you are worried that not having your phone on the table in front of you will make you miss a call in an emergency, you can adjust your Do Not Disturb settings to allow phone calls from a select group of contacts. You can do this either by taking the time to create groups of contacts, a process that for some reason often has to be done from a computer, or you can also just put your chosen contacts into your favorites list. Then set your phone to Do Not Disturb and adjust the Allow Calls From setting to include favorites. Also, it's worth noting that most Do Not Disturb controls include a feature that will override the Do Not Disturb function if you get another call from the same person within 3 minutes, which is presumably what someone who desperately needed to reach you would do, especially if you tell them about this ahead of time. Week 3. Reclaiming Your Brain. Our ability to maintain our focus in one information patch, whether it be a work project, a homework assignment, or something as simple as watching a television program, has been seriously jeopardized. And we believe that modern technology is a major culprit. Adam Ghazali and Larry Rosen. The Distracted Mind. Ancient Brains in a High-Tech World. In The Wake Up, we talked about how spending hours a day on our phones has negative effects on our attention spans, memories, creativity, stress levels, and general experience of life. So now let's work on undoing some of these effects. Many of this week's exercises are inspired by mindfulness. As you know, we've been practicing mindfulness already by noticing when and why we use our phones and how it makes us feel. But now we're going to take this a step further and explore how we can use more formal mindfulness practices to retrain our brains and strengthen our attention spans. Day 15, Monday. Stop, breathe, and be. Stop, breathe, and be is a mindfulness exercise that I learned from Michael Baim, head of the Penn Program for Mindfulness at the University of Pennsylvania. You can use it to remind yourself to pause before reaching for your phone, or to ground yourself anytime you're feeling anxious or agitated in general. Stop, breathe, and be is just what it sounds like. You stop what you're doing, take a slow, deep breath, and tune in to the details of what you're experiencing in that moment. There are many ways to do this, from noticing the physical sensations in your body, to scanning your thoughts and emotions, to taking note of your surroundings. The point of stop, breathe, and be is to create another speed bump between your impulses and actions, and to give yourself a moment to reorient yourself so that you can decide what direction you actually want to go. If you're using it as a way to stop yourself from reaching automatically for your phone, try following it with a round of WWW. What for? Why now? What else? Described on day 4. Today, I'd like you to do at least 2 rounds of stop, breathe, and be, starting with one right now. My body is tense, especially in my chest. It's okay to let myself have this moment to breathe. Emily. One of the buds on my orchid blossomed. I didn't notice until now. Dara. Day 16, Tuesday. Practice pausing. Today, we're going to start practicing something that's simultaneously simple and hard, being still. We tend to think of stillness as being synonymous with boredom, and it's true that we often use both words to describe the same state of mind. But while the word boredom carries with it an element of feeling trapped, stillness offers an opportunity for peace. As Pema Chodron writes in her book, When Things Fall Apart, Heart Advice for Difficult Times, If we immediately entertain ourselves by talking, by acting, by thinking, if there's never any pause, we will never be able to relax. We will always be speeding through our lives. Stillness also gives your mind the space it needs to be creative and come up with new ideas. So let's experiment with deliberately making time to be still. First, identify several situations in which you regularly find yourself reaching for your phone to kill a little bit of time. By little bit, I mean anywhere from 10 seconds to 10 minutes. For example, taking the elevator, waiting to cross the street, taking a cab, using the bathroom, having lunch. Next, choose two or three of those situations, ideally ones that you know you'll encounter today, and commit to being still. Tomorrow, choose a few more and do the same thing. From now through the end of our time together, try to make small doses of stillness a regular part of your day. There are many ways to be still. Stare at the ceiling. Notice the people around you. Taste what you're eating. Look out a window at the sky. It doesn't really matter what you do, as long as you don't reach for a distraction. At first, you're likely to feel physically and emotionally twitchy, as if your brain is banging on a door that usually opens and panicking when it realizes that it's locked. But after a few minutes, or even seconds, your brain will tire itself out. It will stop pounding on the door and start noticing the room that it's already in. And who knows? It might decide that it likes it there. When I notice myself reaching for my phone on the way home just to kill the time because I'm impatient and have 9 stops to go, I leave the phone in my bag and just sit there and do nothing. It's seriously so relaxing, and it's helping me wind down at the end of the day so that I don't go from the office phone email to subway email on phone to home where I feel like I should still be working. Janine. Day 17, Wednesday. Exercise your attention span. Now that we've begun to deliberately practice stillness, our next step is to work on re-strengthening our muscles of attention and rebuilding our ability to ignore distractions. It's like any skill. The more you practice sustaining your attention, the better you'll get at it. Today, we're going to experiment with some informal ways to build an attention-building workout into your day. One way to start is to devote a period of time every day, for example, your walk to work or class, toward actively focusing on something. You could think about a project or problem you're working on professionally or personally. Or you can work on strengthening some mental skill, such as multiplying 2-digit numbers in your head. Don't knock it before you try it. The idea is to build your capacity for focus by, well, focusing. You can also play around with other informal practices. For example, you could take a music bath. Get comfortable and close your eyes as you listen to a favorite piece of music as closely as you can, trying to pick out each individual instrument. You could write in a journal or go to a yoga class, or send a handwritten letter to a friend or relative or mentor. Or you could do something even more straightforward. Read, in print, and with your phone off. Not only can getting lost in a book be a very relaxing and restorative experience, but it's also exactly the type of mental exercise that strengthens our attention spans and encourages deep and creative thought. Why? Because extracting meaning from symbols requires your brain both to maintain focus on those symbols and to simultaneously ignore everything else going on around you. Over time, regular reading causes physical changes to the brain in areas responsible for reasoning, processing visual signals, and even memory. In other words, learning to read doesn't just enable us to store and retrieve information. It literally changes the way we think. It reorganizes our neural circuitry in a way that encourages creativity, problem-solving, and insight. And it increases our ability to sustain attention. In fact, many scholars believe that the development of written language was an integral step toward the development of culture. As Marianne Wolfe writes in her fascinating book about reading, Proust and the Squid, new thought came more readily to a brain that had already learned how to rearrange itself to read. For the rest of our time together, please incorporate at least one attention-building exercise into your daily routine, starting right now. I sat in the car and listened, and actually paid attention to, a story on NPR while I was waiting for a store to open. It felt fine. It felt wonderful, actually, to just sit, do nothing, and listen to a story. Jenny, how you do anything is how you do everything. One of my favorite exercises is to practice doing just one thing at a time. Choose a chore, such as folding the laundry or chopping onions, and devote your full attention to it. You may be surprised by how changing the way you perform these small tasks affects the way you approach other aspects of your life. There's a saying, how you do anything is how you do everything. Think about that the next time you brush your teeth. Day 18, Thursday. Meditate. As we've discussed, paying attention isn't just about choosing what to focus on. It's also about ignoring everything else. And that second part in particular takes a lot of work, especially given our brain's predispositions toward distraction. As neuroscientist Adam Ghazali puts it, ignoring is an active process. It requires our prefrontal cortexes to exert top-down control, suppressing activity in certain brain areas so that the object of our attention stands out. The better we are at ignoring, the better we are at paying attention. And it turns out that being able to ignore distractions is good for our working and long-term memories, too. Today, we're going to experiment with a formal attention-building practice known as mindfulness meditation, a secularized form of Buddhist meditation that's been proven to reduce anxiety levels, increase cognitive control, and make it easier for you to slip into flow. In mindfulness meditation, you choose something from your present experience to focus on. For example, your breathing, external sounds, physical sensations, or even the coming and going of thoughts. And then you try to maintain your attention on that one thing for a set period of time, without judging yourself or trying to change anything. Jon Kabat-Zinn, founder of the Center for Mindfulness at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, calls this a state of non-doing. And if that sounds easy, trust me, it's not. Even people whose attention spans have not been weakened by their phones will find that it's nearly impossible to maintain their focus on anything without their minds wandering. Not only is that completely normal, but it is what our minds are built to do. As one of my meditation teachers liked to say, your mind wanders because you have a mind. The trick is not to fight your mind when it wanders. Instead, once you notice that your attention has drifted, gently bring it back without criticizing yourself. You're likely to have to do this multiple times during your practice, possibly every few seconds, depending on how quickly you notice that it's happened. And that is totally fine. The very fact that you noticed that your mind has wandered means that you're doing it right. If you have been using your phone a lot recently, you're likely to find this type of exercise to be particularly difficult. But the harder you find it, the more important it is to do. And the more you do it, the better at it you'll become. Today, I'd like you to experiment with a brief session of mindfulness meditation. You have two options for how to do so, one of which involves your phone and one of which does not. If you don't want to use your phone, just set a timer, close your eyes, and try to train your focus entirely on your breath for 5 minutes. When your mind wanders, which it will, gently bring your attention back to your breath over and over and over again. You can also do this using prayer or mala beads taking 2 or 3 breaths for every bead. Your other option is to do a guided meditation using Gasp, the internet, or your phone. Yes, I recognize the irony of that suggestion. But as is also true with the app blocking apps we experimented with earlier, this is a case in which your phone can be an extremely useful tool. There are many excellent online guided meditations and meditation apps, most of which have free versions. I'll suggest a few in the recommended resources chapter. If you are worried about getting sucked into a phone spiral before, during, or after your meditation, you can use your app blocker to block access to other apps when you meditate. You can also reduce temptation and increase the likelihood that you'll actually stick with the practice by giving your meditation app a prominent spot on your newly redesigned homepage. So please choose one of these options and try a 5 to 10 minute meditation. If you find the experience intriguing, experiment with making a short meditation session part of your daily routine. Keep it up, and by the end of the breakup, you'll have 2 weeks under your belt. Now that I've started a regular meditation practice, I've been blown away by the slow but steady increase in my attention span and the decreasing feeling of inadequateness and not getting stuff done-ness. Vanessa. Day 19, Friday. Prepare for your trial separation. Good news! The breakup part of this process is almost complete. But before we can move on to the final stage, the part where we make up with our phones, there's one more thing we need to do. The 24-hour trial separation. You should already have scheduled this into your calendar, so now it's time to put your money where your mouth is and put down your phone. Today, our goal is to prepare. Here's what to do to make your trial separation as easy and rewarding as possible. Identify what you're taking a break from. We've been talking specifically about taking a break from our smartphones, but I highly recommend not using any internet-enabled devices with screens, including tablets, smartwatches, laptops, and desktop computers. Voice-activated devices like Alexa are your call. TV and movies, too, though I personally recommend avoiding screens entirely. This experiment is supposed to be dramatic. Tell people what you're doing. Inform your parents, friends, roommates, bosses, and anyone else who's likely to try to contact you for the next 24 hours. This is both to help you prepare and to hold you accountable. Get others on board. Ideally, everyone in your household should participate in the 24-hour break. It can also be fun to recruit a friend to do it with you. Make plans. Schedule enjoyable things you can do and people you can spend time with during the time you usually spend on your phone. See your answers to the questions on day 6 for ideas. Use hard copy instructions. If you're going to be driving someplace new, print instructions or write down directions ahead of time. Yep, for this 24-hour period, you will have to navigate without your phone. Remember, you can always ask for directions. Get a pad of paper or notebook. Use it to make a to-phone list of things that you want to do or look up when your trial separation is over. You may well find that by the time you turn your phone back on, you'll no longer care. Set an automated phone greeting. If you feel it's necessary, change your outgoing voicemail to explain what you're doing. Create a physical contact list. If you have a landline, write down the numbers of people you think you might want to call. There's no restriction on phone calls made on landline phones. They represent live contact with people. Use call forwarding. Speaking of landlines, it's possible to have all calls from your smartphone forwarded to your landline. Instructions for how to do so vary by carrier, so do an internet search ahead of time. Set an out-of-office response. If you're stressed about not responding to emails, set up an email autoresponder, often called a vacation reply, that explains what you're doing. Set an automated text message response. If you're worried about missing texts, set up a text message autoresponder. This means that anytime someone texts you, they will receive an automatic response that says you're not checking your texts, and optional, that tells them a different way to get in touch with you. I am a bit obsessed with text message autoresponder. It makes it much easier for me to take breaks from my phone. And every time I use one, I get messages from friends asking me how to set one up. Days 20 to 21, the weekend. Your trial separation. You can do your trial separation during any 24-hour period this weekend. Make sure that you've done whatever you need to do to prepare. Then, when the time comes, simply turn off your phone and whatever other devices you've decided to take a break from and hide it someplace out of sight. Not airplane mode. Totally off. It can be nice to do a short ritual to mark the transition. I personally like to start my phone breaks at dinner on Friday night. My family and I light a candle, join hands, and take 3 slow breaths before we eat. It puts us in a different state of mind and sets a nice tone for the rest of the weekend. What to expect? Some of you might find the trial separation to be less difficult than you feared, but you may also be surprised by how hard or uncomfortable it is. In addition to their many practical purposes, our phones distract us from our emotions. Don't be surprised if you feel irritable, impatient, or flooded with a wave of existential malaise. You're detoxing. If and when that happens, you can choose to sit with this discomfort. A great practice, even if it's not that pleasant. Alternatively, you can use your extra time to do one of your pre-identified activities. By the way, I was personally surprised by how hard it was to remember, come up with, things that I enjoy doing, and was very reassured to find that many of the guinea pigs felt the same way. Also, a note on attention. You may find it hard to maintain enough focus to do the things you said you wanted to do, even if it's just reading an article in a magazine. If that happens, use it as inspiration to do one of the attention-building practices that we've been experimenting with. I thought it would be so hard, but I was just sitting on the couch and said to myself, "Let's give it a go." I turned off my phone and didn't look back. Deb. What to do with yourself when you don't have your phone? During your trial separation, you can use your newfound free time, of which there will be a lot, to do whatever you want. Here are a few suggestions. Make room for serendipity. When you have the internet in your pocket, there is no room for serendipity. Instead, there are correct answers. Answers that can be found only via the cross-analyses of hundreds of reviews on multiple websites. It doesn't matter that these reviews were written by strangers with whom you might have nothing in common. The fact that they are on the internet gives them more weight than the suggestions of real-life people around you. Barry Schwartz, psychologist and author of The Paradox of Choice, refers to this form of researching as maximizing. Not only is it exhausting, but it can also steal the wonderful feeling of discovery that comes from stumbling across things by accident. Lest I come across as enlightened, you should know that my husband and I have maximized everything from our dust broom to our choice of garbage bags. Your trial separation is a perfect opportunity to allow serendipity to re-enter your life. Take a walk in a new neighborhood. Try a restaurant you've been curious about. Look at the event listings in your local paper and go to something new. No matter what you do, it's likely to be more memorable than staring at your phone. In the afternoon, I was walking around a city I don't know well for about 3 hours, and instead of trying to figure out how to maximize my time, I just wandered. I felt even-keeled and unhurried, and I had a lovely time. Lauren. Have a fleeting relationship. No, I'm not suggesting you have an affair. A fleeting relationship is a brief interaction, often with a stranger, that creates a sense of connection. For example, a pleasant exchange with a waiter, a group cheer at a sports bar, or one of those oddly personal chats that seem to occur between strangers on a plane. You wouldn't think that these interactions would mean much, but they actually can have a surprisingly dramatic effect on how connected we feel to society at large. The more time we spend looking down at our phones instead of at the people around us, the fewer of these fleeting relationships we will have. So during your trail separation, make a point of having at least one fleeting relationship. Notice if it makes a difference in your mood. Do something fun with real people. Hopefully, this is self-explanatory. With phones and social media, people talk about how it creates greater connectivity. But on our phones, we are physically alone. Daniel. What to do in an emergency? If you have an emergency, then of course you should use your phone. Don't lie in a pool of your own blood trying to call an ambulance via smoke signals while your phone sits in its charger nearby. Also, if you're nervous about leaving the house without your phone, remember that if something happens, everyone else around you has a phone. Week 4 and beyond. Your new relationship. It is easy in the world to live after the world's opinion. It is easy in solitude to live after our own. But the great man is he who, in the midst of the crowd, keeps with perfect sweetness the independence of solitude. Ralph Waldo Emerson, Self-Reliance. Congratulations! The hardest part of your breakup is behind you. By now you should have a much clearer sense of how you use your phone, how you want to use your phone, and how you want to be spending your attention. Our goal this week is to begin to lock in these changes. If we do it right, what started as a breakup will end with a breakthrough. Day 22, Monday. Trial separation recap. The first step in our makeup is to reflect on and learn from our trial separations. We'll start with a series of open-ended questions called See, Think, Feel, Wonder. Use them as writing prompts or as conversation starters with anyone who did the trial separation with you. What did you observe about yourself and your behavior and emotions during your 24-hour trial separation? That is, what did you see? I saw myself interacting with others more. Because I didn't have my phone to turn to, I turned to those I was around and engaged in discussion. Once, when I needed a break, I sat down on a bench and meditated for a few minutes instead of reaching for my phone. I felt even-keeled during the 24 hours. Balanced. Ben. What do these observations make you think about? When you reflect back on the experience, what thoughts come into your mind? It made me think that I've been cheating myself out of fully experiencing things. Crystal. Now that you've made it through the trial separation, how do you feel about your phone itself, as well as your relationship with it? I feel like the time away from the phone made me realize how unnecessary it is during certain periods of the day. Katie. I feel much more grateful for the phone now than I was before, as the times I use it are more purposeful and enjoyable. Beth. Now that you've completed the trial separation and begun to deeply observe your relationship with your phone, what do you wonder? What questions do you have? What do you want to know more about? What would you like to investigate further or look into more? I wonder what would happen if I just reverted back to a flip phone. I've got a fusillade of old flip phones sitting in dresser drawers. Why not slip my SIM card into one for a week and give it the old college try? Sandy. Once you've seen, thought, felt, wondered, consider these questions. What was the hardest part?
Just a few hours without my phone left me feeling lonely and almost depressed. I was with friends, but they were all on their phones throughout the day, which made it difficult in those moments.
Daniel.
What was the best part?
The best part was realizing that I'm not a total addict. It's almost like when your spouse takes a trip and you realize, oh, I'm still a whole individual person. I know how to do all these chores my partner usually takes care of, and I can also entertain myself quite capably.
It's like getting back in touch with your identity and finding, reassuringly, that it's still there.
Vanessa.
What surprised you?
When I went back on to social media, which sadly I was quite excited to do, there was little on there of interest. I didn't miss anything.
Savan. What did you learn from the experience that you can use once your official breakup is over?
I need to put the phone in its place more often.
Jessica. Day 23. Tuesday. P-H-A-S-T. Fast. Just as intermittent fasting has been shown to be good for our physical health, regular short phone fasts, what I call fasts with a PH, are essential for our emotional and intellectual health. As you well know, being constantly tethered to our phones exhausts our brains. They need regular phone-free time to recover and rejuvenate. And as is also true with other potentially addictive behaviors, it's important to take a break once in a while just to prove that you can. There are many ways to fast, and they don't have to be 24 hours long. You could continue the practice of turning your phone off when you go to bed on Friday and giving it a Saturday wake-up time that's several hours after your own, and use your phone-free mornings to do something nourishing for yourself. You could choose an activity every weekend that you will do without your phone, such as a hike. You could force yourself to take a break from social media by having someone temporarily change your password for you, for example, your partner or kid. Whatever you do, remember that the point is not to punish yourself. It's to make yourself feel good. In other words, don't ask yourself, when could I force myself to take a break from my phone? Instead, ask yourself, when would I like to take a break from my phone? With that in mind, please identify a time today, anywhere between a half hour and an hour will do, when you will leave your phone behind or turn it off entirely. Choose a time when the idea of leaving your phone sounds pleasant. For example, when you're walking your dog, when you're taking a lunch break, or when you're having dinner. Then continue to experiment with these short fasts from now through the end of your breakup. The more regularly you fast, the less you will be drawn toward your phone during the rest of your day.
I went out to dinner with my wife and left my phone at home. It was great. I continued to leave it behind when going on walks or just stepping out for a bit. She has been doing the same, so we've been able to connect.
Crystal. Day 24, Wednesday. Manage your invitations. One of the hardest parts about changing your relationship with your phone is having to constantly say no to invitations sent by your own brain. For example, oh, hi, I see that you just woke up. Want to look at your phone to see if anyone messaged you while you were sleeping?
It looks like you might be about to try to meditate. How about we just check social media for a second first?
This date is boring. Let's excuse ourselves to use the bathroom and then text someone else from the toilet.
We've already done a lot of work on managing our phone-related invitations and making proactive decisions about how we want to spend our time and attention, rather than just reacting to our phones. Like many of the things we've been experimenting with, this practice, which, as you know, is rooted in mindfulness, can be extremely useful in the rest of your life as well. Today, let's try expanding the way we use it. Try to notice some of the invitations
both phone and non-phone related, that your brain is sending. Then make a conscious decision about how you want to respond. For example, if someone cuts you off in traffic, don't immediately express yourself through hand gestures and choice obscenities. Instead, pause, stop, breathe, and be. Notice what your brain is inviting you to do. Consider possible alternatives. Then decide how you actually want to react. When I reach for my phone, I pause and ask myself, why are you reaching for your phone? Most of the time, I realize that I was just reaching for it out of habit and the desire for distraction, and I put the phone down without looking at it. It's a great feeling. Beth. Day 25, Thursday. Clean up the rest of your digital life. Today, we're going to continue to tidy up other parts of our digital lives. We've already talked about text messages, dating and games, app blockers, and password managers. So now let's focus on email. You get too many, and most are unimportant. 1. Unsubscribe. For the next week, take a moment to unsubscribe to any email you receive from a list you don't want to be on. Or, if that sounds too complicated, do an internet search for apps that automatically unsubscribe you from email and install one. 2. Save yourself from the tyranny of your inbox. Despite what you've trained yourself to believe, you do not actually have to respond immediately to every message in your inbox. Nor do you even have to see them when they arrive. You can do this in a number of different ways, including setting an app blocker to give you access to your email inbox only during certain times of day, and/or installing a plugin for your particular browser and email client, such as Chrome and Gmail, that gives you control over how many times you see your inbox, and for how long. I've been using one of these plugins to stay focused while writing this book, and it has been a game changer. 3. Use folders to keep yourself sane. Create a needs response folder to store messages that actually require a response. You could even sort them by importance, so that when you do look at your email, you don't feel overwhelmed by the sight of your entire inbox. 4. Set up a commerce email account. In other words, create a new email address for yourself that you will use when you buy things. This is a way of keeping unwanted spam email out of your primary inbox while still finding out about sales. 5. Set up a VIP list of people whose emails you don't want to miss. Ignore everyone else. Kidding, not kidding. 6. When you're on vacation, avoid the dreaded email pileup upon your return by creating a new email account along the lines of your name underscore important. Then set an autoresponder that says not just that you are on vacation and won't be checking email, but that you won't be reading the email that accumulates while you're away. Give the name of someone to contact if people need immediate help, and say that if people really want to talk to you upon your return, they should resend the message to the aforementioned important email address, and that you will respond when you're back. You will be amazed by how few people actually take you up on this. This is inspired by a German company, Daimler, which automatically deletes employees' incoming emails while they're on vacation and tells senders whom to contact if they need immediate help. Social media. Ideally, you no longer have social media apps on your phone. But regardless, take a moment to prune your accounts. Unfollow people you don't care about or whose posts make you feel bad. Create lists of people based on their roles in your life, such as friends, family, colleagues, vague acquaintances, so that when you share a photo of yourself on vacation, you can specify which group of people will see it. If you use social media for your job, consider making a separate professional account. Add something to your profile that indicates how often you'll be checking it. And if you haven't already, explore the depths of your social media account settings. There are a lot more options than most of us realize. Driving. Take advantage of automatic drive modes that disable your phone when you reach a certain speed. Do an internet search for drive mode and your phone model carrier. Linked accounts. A lot of sites now give you the option of logging in using your social media account, such as logging into Spotify using your Facebook credentials. Do not take them up on this option. And if you've already linked your accounts, take the time to begin to separate them by creating playlists that are independent of your Facebook account, for instance. These are the types of things that you know you should do, but which you never seem to get around to. Now that I've finally done them, I'm amazed by how big of an impact they've had on my overall stress levels and sense of control. Edwin. Day 26, Friday. Check your checking. Here's a great way to catch yourself when you're about to check your phone. Whenever you notice that you're itching to check something, email, social media, text messages, the news, whatever, ask yourself some simple questions. What's the best thing that could happen as a result of your checking? What's the best email you could receive? The best piece of news? The best notification? What's the best emotion that you could experience? Then ask yourself, what is the likelihood that this will actually happen? Spoiler alert, your chances are low. Very low. I'm willing to bet that if you were to reach for your phone right now, you would not find a note from a headhunter offering you your dream job, news that makes you feel great, or an out-of-the-blue invitation to dinner from an attractive stranger. Far more likely is that you're going to see something that upsets you or stresses you out. Once you realize how unlikely your best-case scenario is to happen, it becomes a lot easier to stop checking your phone. The more I reach for my phone out of a desire to feel good, the worse it makes me feel. David. Use other people's checking to check your checking. The more you pay attention to your own phone habits, the more you're going to notice how often other people are on their phones. You'll see people crossing busy intersections with their eyes glued to their phones, families that go out to eat together and then spend the meal silently staring at their devices. Subway cars full of faces lit by that familiar blue glow. Pick a habit that you've been trying to establish and see if you can use the sight of people on their phones as your cue. Seeing people on the elevator check their phones used to make me check mine. But now, when I see the person next to me start reaching for his pockets, I use it as a cue to take a deep breath and ask myself what I want to pay attention to in that moment. Unsurprisingly, it's usually not my phone. Peter. Day 27, Saturday. Digital Sabbath Life Hacks. Despite their initial apprehension, many people end up finding the 24-hour break from their phones so rewarding that they decide they'd like to turn the trial separation into a regular digital Sabbath. This doesn't need to happen every weekend. Even once a month will go a long way toward inoculating you against compulsively reaching for your phone. Nor do you necessarily need to take a break from all of your devices or shut them off completely. The point, as always, is to personalize your experience. If you're interested in this idea, feel free to use this weekend to experiment with another break. If you're not, use this weekend to further solidify some of the other habits you've been working on. Here are some suggestions for how to make it easier to take regular digital Sabbaths. Untangle your devices. One of the best things about smartphones, that they serve so many purposes, is also the worst. You pull out your phone to listen to a podcast before bed and end up spending an hour reading the news. One solution is to invest in separate devices. By now, you should already have a separate alarm clock. Depending on your habits, you might also want to consider getting a separate e-reader or music player or even a digital camera. Or, alternatively, create a house phone. Instead of tossing or recycling your old phone when you upgrade, Keep it as a pared-down house phone that can be used only as a tool. Delete all the apps, including the internet browser, except for the camera, music, timer, calculator, and other